he is, you know, has the kind of access to the circles of power in Washington that few, if any, ambassadors have. He gets meetings with the president. He meets constantly with top White House advisors, as well as members of Congress. And he sort of used the Saudi playbook from the 1980s in Afghanistan. In the case of Afghanistan, you're probably familiar with the Tom Hanks portrayal of Charlie Wilson, Congressman Wilson, in supporting arming the rebels, the Mujahideen in Afghanistan. Well, in the case of Syria, the Saudis identified the core group as being Senators McCain, Senator Graham, and former Senator Lieberman. And that was the core group. And then Adel al-Jubeir, the ambassador,
we have about 5 seconds,
expand,
Adam.
Sure. Worked to expand that out to bring more people in. And in the end, built a great deal more support within Congress for arming the rebels.
Adam Antus, I want to thank you for being with us and ask you to stay with us an extra 10 minutes after the show so we could talk to you about your latest piece, the U.S. deciding not to horse trade with Russia and Assad, about the G20 meeting. And we'll post it online at democracynow.org. Adam Antus is the national security correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. We'll link to the story he wrote about the Saudi ambassador in Washington, past and present. We also have a job opening here, an IT systems administrator. Check our website. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
This is WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show. And we call it the new WHFR Journal. To another edition of the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronek, happy to be with you today. This is local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. And I'm joined in the studio, as usual, by our WHFR News Director, Dennis Reimars.
Hello. Hi, hello, Dennis. There I am.
Mm-hmm.
All right. How are you today?
Well, we're good. Beautiful day in Dearborn, as they say, and no insult intended there. We have a lot of big stories today, and I don't know, well, where to start. I guess, since he's an always popular topic, although I originally said I wouldn't ever do a story about him anymore, but Reverend Terry Jones wins a lawsuit he filed against the city of Dearborn.
This is actually newsworthy and kind of separate from his
yes.
shenanigans.
Yes, it doesn't give him any extra publicity. I think it does make a good point about the city of Dearborn and the way in the past that it actually restricted free speech.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the ruling as the story from, am I reading pressandguide.com? I think I am. A U.S. District judge ruled Friday, that would be last Friday, I believe. The story appeared on Tuesday, September 3rd. This is patch.com. Let's give credit where credit is due.
Right.
Yes. It said that Dearborn violated Florida Pastor Terry Jones' First Amendment rights by forcing him and representatives from his group Stand Up America Now to sign an indemnification agreement before Jones and founder Wayne Sapp planned to speak in the city last year. Judge Denise Page Hood said that a city ordinance that required Jones to sign the indemnification agreement before speaking outside a Dearborn mosque was a violation of the First Amendment Freedom of Speech and Expressive Association Clause and an ordinance requiring the police chief to grant a special permit only after the indemnification agreement was signed also violated Stand Up for America's America's Now's constitutional rights. Jones and Sapp plan to speak out and denounce Sharia law from the grassy median in front of the Islamic Center of America on April 7, 2012, the day before Easter on the Christian calendar. They also plan to distribute flyers with a biblical verse and the group's contact information. Well, they got a lawyer from the Thomas More Law Center, a national public interest firm based in Ann Arbor, and they have won the case now. And the president and chief counsel of Thomas More Law Center applauded Judge Hood's decision. Judge Hood's ruling upholds a bedrock principle of the First Amendment that government cannot inhibit the expression of an idea just because some find the idea offensive. The principle is in stark contrast to those nations ruled by Sharia law, by the way. The fact went on to say, quote, continuing the quote, the fact that some may find Pastor Jones a controversial public figure or object to his message or object to his message is even greater reason for Dearborn officials to ensure his right to free speech was protected. So despite the fact that Dearborn has one of the largest concentrations of Muslims in America, the city should have protected Pastor Jones' right to free speech, not contrive a way to impede it. And there you go. Well, so two ordinances that Dearborn had in place, and I actually printed them out here. From Judge Hood wrote a 12-page ruling about that. Has to do with, one, what is indemnification? Well, it is a release of a waiver of liability and hold harmless agreement, okay? So that if anything is, I guess, said or whatever, it couldn't have anything to do with the city. So, it, you know, and you're not going to sue the city for anything that comes after that. And, you know, so they say we're not going to, we're not going to do that. We're not going to sue. Well, that's against your basic right in America. You can sue anybody at any time for almost anything. Maybe it's going to be kicked out of the court if it's frivolous or doesn't actually go with the law. The law's in place. But that and this additional payment of city services ruling, too, the sponsor of a special event who accepts a permit thereby consents to the formation of a contract between the sponsor and the city for payment of costs for city services and equipment set forth in this section. And, you know, these are two separate ordinances. Because the other one was Ordinance 1733. That was the indemnification one. And then there was the allowing the chief of police to issue a permit upon approval. And just so it's clear, Ordinance 1733 and 1728D were found to be
unconstitutional.
Yeah, but the payment of city services is still in place, by the way. And I remember the event when Jones in 2012 was in front of the mosque. I drove by briefly. Mm-hmm. There must have been every police car that Dearborn had, as well as fire department vehicles, because who knows, he might start a fire, or somebody else, you know, and medical services.
But very few people other
so,
than that. Right?
So after the fact, did they send a bill to him?
Sounds like it.
I mean, that's crazy.
Or
I mean,
maybe it was his follow-up.
Because just because he's saying things that might be controversial, how should he be responsible if other crazies, you know, cause trouble?
Well, do you remember when he actually...
I'm sorry, other crazies.
Wow.
If crazies...
In general.
Not himself necessarily, not the speaker necessarily, but other people might not allow him to speak and do something violent.
Let me just say that the opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of anyone
right.
here at the college.
Right.
I remember he
even accidentally.
Even Freudian slip.
Yep.
He, when he spoke out in front of the Arab National Museum, which is in front of across from City Hall,
right.
you remember he needed a police escort to go down the street. And that may be what they're talking about, because that would have been something on a personal
level.
They
still need, just in case you're thinking of speaking in Dearborn, and again, last week we reported that a group of people
right.
Protested the a future military action, if you want to call it that, or a war in Syria,
mm-hmm.
And that was on Apache.com's story, and they were, I guess there was about 50 to 100 people on the steps of Dearborn City Hall. Question is, did they need a permit for that?
It was mostly peaceful from what I understand as
well. I mean, was peaceful or not, do you need a permit? Supposedly for a public gathering for an event. So how do they define a special event?
Right.
You need a permit still from the city of Dearborn. I remember when, because I'm so old, it must have been 15 years ago, but not too much more than that, that the city of Dearborn had a 30-day advance permit that was required. In other words, anything you're planning to do after they approve of it, you still have to wait 30 days.
Wow.
So the whole point of a public demonstration and speaking out on an issue, a current issue, the issue may be gone.
Yeah, it may not be current at 30 days.
I mean, maybe there's a follow-up you could speak on, but it's not the same thing.
Right.
If you want to influence public opinion, well, you really have to get on radio or TV.
Yeah.
But you know, public speaking that might get a camera or a microphone there for you, that would also get you that attention in the other media. And
but as you said, we said off the air, some of these things normally are very spontaneous.
Well, the 30, if it's got to be clear here that ACLU, Civil Liberties Union here in America, sued against that, and they can't have a 30-day wait period before you speak in public. So I'm all in favor of freedom of speech, and yes, I'm all in favor of people speaking, even if we don't agree with it. In the city of Dearborn, and yes, the city has to make some call about, you know, if the events might raise controversy or disputes with other parties in the city, maybe having police or fire or medical services available. But did they send Terry Jones a bill for that? Because I swear there's 15, 20 cars, police cars out there and other kinds of emergency vehicles. This was in 2012. So, I mean, I wouldn't pay that. I mean, especially since they weren't needed.
Now, what happens with these ordinances? Obviously, they've been proven that they're unconstitutional. Are they automatically off the books, or do they have to go through a process?
That's just a local judge, so you could the city could appeal.
Sure.
In terms of finding these ordinances unconstitutional, the city lost the case. They could appeal, of course, to somebody, I guess, if they chose to. I have said publicly and off the record, too, that Dearborn's rules go way too far. And sure, if you can get away with it, why not? You reduce the chance of anybody saying anything, good or bad, of course, and then there's no trouble at all. But excuse me, we don't live in that kind of world. We need people to express their opinions freely and show support for issues that they believe in. And yes, it has to be, it should be civil. It should be respectful of all parties. But often it's not the speaker. It's the people that react to the speaker violently, I think. Thinking of a few KKK protests like 20 years ago in Dearborn, it was the other people in the city that were upset with the speakers, not the speakers causing any physical violence. They were just talking.
But they're talking, and they realize they're antagonistic. So there's a cause and effect there.
Yeah, I mean, of course our government has to try to protect the populace. Okay. But that's why we have the courts. That's why we have ebb and flow on issues to find out what the right balance is between the freedoms that I thought we founded this country on and that we want to maintain and continue. And, of course, the relatively smooth running of our government and our society, too. Some of the comments on – this was on patch.com. Yeah, some of the comments I read there. And, well, of course, everybody says it's Mayor O'Reilly's fault.
Of course.
The four or five people, because they're just waiting. It seems like there's a group of people that wait for any story to come up about Dearborn, and then immediately they blame the mayor. Boy, they were really hot, too. In fact, Daniel Lay had to indicate that several comments, which we didn't see, he had to delete.
Really?
Yeah.
Because
some of them were anti-Muslim.
Some were inappropriate.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Well, the inappropriate word choice. There's a policy at patch.com of what kind of posts you can do.
As there should be.
But the only way you know that he came in and took things out is when he puts his own post on there that I had to take some things out.
Yeah.
And I think he took out the whole post, not just changed words around or something.
Good.
Nonetheless, just saying, they thought, well, this was O'Reilly's decision. Excuse me, these ordinances have been in place for quite a while here in Dearborn, and I don't know when they started, but it didn't happen just before Terry Jones got here. They've been around for years and years, along with that 30-day waiting period, which is gone, but these were around, I think, easily before that. So, anyway, you know, however you feel. I don't think it's the mayor's fault directly. Blame the police. Blame previous mayors. But who passed the ordinances?
Right. City council.
City council.
Yes.
Yeah. So if you want to blame somebody, because the city's got to pay legal fees, whatever it is. Thomas More Public Interest Law School, how much do they charge? Probably not as much as a commercial lawyer. Commercial, private lawyer, a lawyer in private practice.
You never know.
But and I don't know how many hours they had to spend in court or preparing briefs on this. Usually lawyers get more than $200 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So,
wow, we're in the wrong business.
So at least probably thousands of dollars here. But some people were directly blaming Mayor O'Reilly, and that's just not right. But I've always felt, and it doesn't mean that the way it should be, folks, but I've always personally felt that these restrictions on free speech went way too far. Some of the things have been done at Dearborn Homecoming, like having free speech areas just for people that want to speak.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay, but it's not nice to have them out there in the hot sun. You know, that's not nice because that only means they can only stay out there for a brief period, and they're not supposed to have umbrellas or a tent. They can't even have a table. I guess they can have a chair. We saw some chairs out there last homecoming.
Yeah.
I mean, they need to give people that want to speak, especially at homecoming, or set up a booth or a table for 3 days, they need to put them in a covered pavilion. But I guess they're all taken up by the Polish people and the Italians and
the food vendors.
I mean, all of our covered pavilions are basically full up with things that make money for the city.
I'm 100% Polish, so we're always looking for a tent. So
sure, what, there you
get
go.
Get out of the sun.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to say, and I'm not endorsing him in either way, but I was kind of impressed with the way the city handled Pastor Jones when he was here, when he was right across from City Hall. And I really was impressed with the way the people were, regardless of their religion or race or whatever. Everybody was holding hands. It was actually the turnout was quite the opposite of what he expected, what he wanted, I think, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
Are we moving on?
Okay,
here?
Yeah, I think so.
Cool.
Just a state issue here that just came up. Late breaking news. This is from PressAndGuide.com, from Dearborn Press and Guide. The state of Michigan has gotten a $9 million grant to improve Dearborn to Kalamazoo rail line. That's from the federal government, and it is part of the Transportation Investment Generating Economic Recovery Act. And its acronym, I love it, TIGER.
TIGER.
TIGER. The TIGER. We got TIGER money here.
TIGER Railway.
Ooh. Yeah. And the government received 585 applications for $9 billion from all 50 states, District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, and Guam.
All right. Those are territories.
So we were a little competition there, folks. As you know, the federal government also gave us money, $28.2 million, to build the train station in Dearborn, a new train station. And that is scheduled for opening, of course, next spring, next summer sometime. And the station will be owned by the city. Okay.
Well, we said when we first got the money, this grant is only as good as the ability to put in the new tracks.
Right.
And
yeah,
now
the new train station is kind of, well, it's a pretty place to walk into, but the train's only going to be able to go to Chicago, let's say, at 38 miles an hour average speed, then it's you might as well walk take a bike.
Sure.
Or anything else that goes 38 miles an hour. So the goal is to increase the speed of this trail line from Dearborn to Kalamazoo up to 110 miles per hour. And Amtrak's Wolverine line is sort of the express train, I guess. It has 3 non-stops a day between Pontiac and Chicago. Each of the 6 trains also stops in Dearborn. So that train station is going to be more and more busy, and especially if more and more people use the train, I hope you will. There is no time in the story for completion of those higher speed tracks.
Let's hope it coincides with the actual completion of the hub.
Yeah.
So we're talking we can get to, we'll be able to get to Chicago by train in under 3 hours.
Well, I'm trying to remember what the hang-up was before. There was a part of the train line that
That's
was
right.
owned by somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Around where, like Battle Creek or something?
Well, is it west of Kalamazoo to Indiana or something?
Yeah, something like that.
But I thought they got an agreement from them to either sell or upgrade. It's a private company, but that's vaguely in my recollection.
And I remember they wouldn't budge back then. And they were talking
I think they did budge.
Okay.
But we'll find out.
I think you're right, though. They were debating
I mean,
the new
trains. If they really could keep the speed, and even with the stops, that means 3 to 4 hours.
Yeah.
I mean,
three.
You know, 3 hours, 110 miles an hour, but you're stopping three times for, I don't know, 15 minutes, maybe 10 minutes. So
it's 300 miles by car. So
by
train, it's
I think it's a little bit less than 300 by car, but nonetheless, it's it could be really quick, and I would think people would go there a lot.
But I'm asking,
As often as they go from the suburbs to Detroit.
Well, when I let's hope it's more. Yeah. When I lived in New York, I actually lived in Connecticut, and I had a 2-hour commute. I worked downtown on Hudson Street, and I would drive to the train station, take the train to Grand Central, take a subway downtown, and then walk 6 blocks. 2 hours. Do you think people from Chicago might come looking for work here? Or do you think that's still too? People don't do that.
If we have
anymore.
Any jobs.
I was so young. I didn't care. 21 years old, 2-hour commute, I don't care. You know, I had books.
This is the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. Jay Kornick, Dennis Reimer is with you today. And following up on that, Dennis, here's an article from a news site that sends me an email regularly. They are greencarreports.com. Greencarreports.com.
Okay.
And it's just like several automotive magazines that send you story updates every day for free. And except they're just worried, they're just concerned about green cars. That is, cars that use less gas, more efficient, good for the world, the planet, and so on.
They don't have to be 100% electric, then. They can be hybrids.
No, they talk about hybrids and plug-ins and so on. So, but this story says, going for a walk, you mentioned walking.
Sure.
Says, don't give up and use your car instead. The American author Bill Bryson once wrote that, quote, the fact is that Britain is still the best place in the world for most things, to go for a walk or stand on a hillside and take in a view, unquote. Sadly, the article says, it seems fewer and fewer Britons are doing so these days, with a new report suggesting that 1 in 5 never ventures more than 1/3 of a mile from their cars.
Wow. Well, they don't have dogs.
That's only 1 in 5. Then. According to The Independent, a new survey by the National Trust, which is Britain's equivalent of the U.S. National Park Service, it suggests that people in the country are walking less than ever. While promoted as a green, healthy way of getting around, over a quarter admitted in the survey that they have, quote, resorted to their car or public transportation to complete a walk. I guess they get tired, and so they...
What's ironic, Bill Bryson wrote a great book about his walk along the Appalachian Trail, which is, what, like 1,900 miles?
Mm-hmm.
And it was called Walk in the Woods. Very subtlety is the key to emphasis here.
Absolutely.
But I don't know if you've read him, but he's a very interesting travel writer.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, a full 22% have abandoned a walk halfway through and turned around. Wow.
How do you determine the halfway mark? Wherever you stop is the halfway mark.
Just a survey that they did in England. Equivalent figures for the U.S. aren't forthcoming, but in a country known for its attachment to cars, the numbers are unlikely to differ too significantly. Not that they aren't going in the right direction, unlike our British counterparts. Not only are Americans driving less, but statistics from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention show that from 2005 to 2010, the proportion of U.S. adults who reported actively walking more than 10 minutes over the last 7 days. What is that?
10 minutes and
you
7
You walked only 10 minutes in the last 7 days?
You do that in a parking lot alone.
Well, that number, the good news is that number has increased by over 6%. So we have 6% more people walking for 10 minutes.
Okay.
Over the last 6 weeks, over the last 7 days.
You walk every day, don't you?
Yes. Yeah. I think whichever branch of the government suggests healthy things to do, they think you should walk 30 to 45 minutes a day,
mm-hmm.
at least 5 days a week.
Okay.
And I do about 30 minutes a day, 5 or 6 times a week.
No kidding.
And I think that's extremely important as a minimum. Yesterday, I actually tooled around East Dearborn on my bicycle for about an hour because the weather was so beautiful,
perfect.
Nice and cool, and get a little sunshine, which is healthy, folks, if you don't tan too much. Or
when you had the dog, though, you walked the dog quite a bit, didn't you?
The dog had to walk at a fast pace.
Yeah.
But
that's the benefit or the disadvantage, however you want to put it, of living in an area that can't have fenced-in yards, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah. But we have a lot of nice sidewalks, not just the grid type, you know, up and down. We have what they call a New England style pathways in my neighborhood.
Oh, okay.
Like almost every street, well, except for 3 or 4 to get in, are cul-de-sacs.
Okay.
But between the end of these, dead-end streets, are little walk paths that go to the next street over. And we don't have any sidewalks. We actually, well, again, on the two or three streets that go straight through or out or in, there are sidewalks there, but not in the basic residential area of the subdivision. And so you can, like, walk through park areas that separate some of the cul-de-sacs. You can, so you never have to really walk the same way twice, even if you're just doing this 10 minutes every day. Although, I mean, you have to, folks, honest. I didn't discover the need for this much exercise until I was much older and knew that the health ramifications. And everybody, even if you're young and you think, "Oh, I'm healthy, I don't feel bad at all," it'll get you in the end. So so in this article from GreenCarReports.com, he concludes, it's never easy to walk everywhere, of course, not even cycle, but next time you're at one of the country's beautiful national parks and you're thinking of driving from one viewing area to the next, why not walk instead? You'll save gas, get some exercise, and may even feel better as a result.
Right.
Ooh. Okay. Moving on here. Let's see. Okay. We mentioned last week that there was going to be a meeting at Edsel Ford High School between the parents of children at Edsel Ford and the school administration. Brian Winston, who is superintendent of Dearborn Public Schools, was there too. And a nice article that's going to appear probably in their Sunday edition. It's on their website, pressandguide.com, right now, from Katie Hetrick. Just the first sentence tells you the tenor of the comments. Edsel Ford High School parents peppered administrators Wednesday night. No salt, I guess.
No,
just pepper.
No, just pepper.
Just threw pepper at them. Peppered administrators with questions about the new schedule, the quality of education, and what the school is doing in response to the state designating it as a priority school, which means it's bad.
Right.
Priority means it's a top priority to help.
Right.
It's red, which is the color they've given bad schools.
And so you know
as low as you can go. Red.
Five colors. What are they? Green, lime green, yellow, orange, and red.
Mm-hmm.
And we're red.
Yep. Well, the principal, who is Scott Casebolt, was there, right? And Superintendent Brian Winston was there too. They said that the scores were down, but he said, you know, it's only a couple points for a lot of students, only 1 or 2 points away from being proficient on various parts of the qualifying test. So they didn't miss by much.
Sounds like a perfect storm.
That's one argument,
yeah.
Anyway. And but he did say, back to the parents, each of you, talking to the parents,
sure,
needs to take responsibility for your learning and your future. I don't know, were students there? I mean, for your children's learning and their future, too.
Right.
Now, one of the things we said is that they're adding an hour a day, 4 days a week. Not five, just 4 days a week, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. So on Wednesday, the schedules will be shortened back to the usual 2:15 so the teachers can have an hour of professional development. My daughter was telling me at the Southfield Public Schools, now they have an hour of professional development, and it's the most boring, stupid things they have ever heard. I won't mention the school or the principal's name, but this is not, you know, real constructive improvements. Basically, the principal is harassing the teachers, saying you're not doing a good enough job, but not giving them more resources, more funding, you know, still overloading the classes. And my daughter now has close to 30 severely handicapped, special needing type students, and emotionally dangerous, physically dangerous students. That she's got the worst batch, because the test for the core, Common Core, I think I mentioned, are for math and English. Well, she does science, so they don't care how badly she does, so she gets dumped, and she has no special needs, special ed support whatsoever.
And
she's not qualified.
No,
and she's not qualified. She didn't need. Why did she have to be qualified? I mean, she chose to be a teacher of science years ago, and we really need a specialist in that area. One of the worst school districts in terms of funding in the country is, that I'm familiar with, is Austin, Texas. And I know teachers who are friends of mine in that district. But by golly, and one of my friends, she is a special ed teacher in the Austin Public Schools District, or they call it intermediate, but in the Austin District. And they don't have the situation they have in Southfield. And one of the things we're going to investigate in the future is some of these questions with the people who should know Maybe next Friday, Dennis?
Next Friday, we will be joined in studio by, you just spoke of, Brian Whiston, the superintendent of Dearborn Schools, as well as the public relations arm of the schools, Dave Mustonen.
Right.
Now, we've had Mr. Mustonen on a couple times.
Right.
And but this is a, obviously a lot of awareness, a lot of information is going out there to the public.
They will of course too talk about the millage that's coming up in the November election. And just FYI, we are not having them on to ask for a yes vote. In other words, they're not going to advocate, but they are trying to explain in detail how much money they're asking for, what it's going for, is it new money or equivalent to what you've already been spending, why are they doing it this way? Like general maintenance money is now in this bond issue, where general maintenance in the past was always part of the general budget, their ongoing fund. So that's a change. And they'll explain all that, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, the theory is the more you know, the better equipped you will be to vote. Mm-hmm. So we're going to try to do that.
And, of course,
you.
One thing that they can mention is what other public gatherings will they be that's scheduled. So you can go, and I'm sure almost every school will have a gathering for parents, voters, come and ask detailed questions, their own personal questions, too. But we want to kick off the ball with a lot of information there. And we hope to do the same thing for Henry Ford Community College. Now, according to FCC rules, a non-commercial station cannot advocate for anything that might help earn money for their nonprofit licensee. And so in this case, even if we talk about the Henry Ford Community College millage proposals, two of them that'll also be on the November ballot, we won't be advocating. We'll just be informing you. And I'm going to keep the line there. I hope to ask some relatively tough questions about the money and the dollars. So I'm not here to advocate, and that's not what we can do in these shows. Even if personally, I might be already in favor. Okay.
Right.
That, but I'm not saying.
You're just saying even if.
Even if.
Right. And I'm sure we'll address the issue of Edsel Ford High School as well.
Yeah. One of the things they said here, and we'll get to Jim Hightower's commentaries in just about a minute here, just finishing up the story, some of the parents actually read the law, and they said, why did you add a full hour to these 4 days a week? And, of course, again, there are some people in some programs that don't get the extra hour, but we won't go into that right now. Whiston adamantly defended the decision to add an hour. Apparently, the state only requires 20 minutes be added to the school day.
So we're going to be three times better here.
Right.
Oh, not we, but that's
and these people said, I guess they're worried about daycare, or they want the kids home earlier, or the kids can go to work earlier or something.
Right.
Whatever the reason is. Others said that time could have come from lunch. Yeah, don't eat lunch. Swallow it. Inhale it directly. Or reduce the passing time between classes. How fast can you run between classes?
I thought
running in the hallways was not allowed.
Right.
But
and that's a pretty big school. Mm-hmm. So you're talking, I think they have like 6 minutes now.
Others argued that other schools should have time added. So it was only the Edsel Ford that got the red designation. And Whiston said there's no research that says adding 20 minutes is going to affect results. So that's why he added an hour. Well, where's the research that adding an hour is going
to... Well, if they had to add something, he was erring on the side of...
Well, I think because all the class period, all the classes that happen during the day are an hour long.
50.
So, yeah, 50, and that's the length of a class period. So if they're going to add special classes, remedial classes or review classes or whatever, it's true, 20 minutes, you get in there, the teacher takes attendance, and...
You're opening your books.
Yeah, you open your books and say, okay, that's it, bye.
Exactly.
It's true that, for the typical traditional class period, you can't do anything really in 20 minutes very effectively, and so that's why he added an hour. He says, I'm not penalizing anyone, and so on, but I didn't need it to do it at the other schools because they weren't red.
Right, and that was the mandate. Did you see that the idea of the high school kids going to school an hour later is picking up steam across the country?
Yes, it's not happening in Dearborn, and that's one thing we'll try to talk about with Wisconsin.
No, and after that wonderful editorial by the student, too, but no, across the whole country, it's really it's getting a lot of consideration.
Yeah, but what school locally did change their times? Dearborn Heights. I just did a story 2 weeks ago.
You did?
I did.
With?
I think it was certain Dearborn Heights schools are starting, of course it's staggered, but they're starting an hour later, about 8 o'clock-ish.
Crestwood.
8:30, Crestwood, yeah, instead of 7 or 7:15.
Right.
So, but of course, also realize that that extra hour, because of the bus issues, was an extra cost to the district,
right,
which needs to put money into improving instruction. Where they said $2 million and extra buses, extra drivers. Oh, my.
You're talking
goodness.
About for Dearborn Heights?
No, this is back in Dearborn.
Yeah, back in Dearborn. I
mean, for the extra hour they've added.
Yeah, that's,
so,
it's going to be something.
Dearborn Heights, I would assume they just have the bus drivers start later.
Yeah.
I mean, the same buses, same routes, they just do them later and
it's still staggered, you're right.
Later in the afternoon, I guess. So, anyway, Henry Ford Community College also is in the news this week, losing teachers. Some great teachers have taken early retirement here. I want to mention that briefly. And they're considering a tuition hike to help balance the budget. So we'll talk about that right after Jim Hightower's comments. And I know Labor Day is over now. And I just feel sorry that some people were laboring. I mean, it should be called, you know, it should be called
Labor Day
right. Or No Labor Day. But no. It's supposed to be a recognition of the advances of all workers organizing, yes, in unions, for the betterment of their situation. And sometimes we forget what that's all about. And then there's people laboring. I was happy to see that many restaurants were closed. Most fast food restaurants were open, but because, you know, you got to have fast food, right? Or you're going to die. So here's Jim Hightower's two commentaries. First one is about Labor Day, and the second one is about USA. Say yes to USA. We are now officially a low-wage nation compared to the rest of the world. Take a listen here and take some notes, and Dennis and I will present the rest of the stories on the Journal right after.
Webster's Dictionary says that Labor Day was set aside for special recognition of working people. How nice. But set aside by whom? Certainly not by the Wall Street, corporate, and political powers that be. They nearly swallowed their $100 cigars when the idea of honoring labor's importance to America's economy and social well-being was first proposed in 1882. Rather, this holiday was created by working people themselves in a 12-year political struggle that culminated with an act of Congress in 1894. The campaign helped coalesce old and emerging unions into a national movement, but it also countered the haughty insistence of the robber barons of that time that they were America's makers, the invaluable few whose monopolistic pursuits must be unfettered, for corporations are the God-ordained creators of wealth. Labor Day put both political symbolism and organized muscle behind Abraham Lincoln's conviction that the real makers are the many ground-level workers who actually do the making. Labor is prior to and independent of capital, Abe declared in his first State of the Union address. Capital is only the fruit of labor and could never have existed if labor had not first existed. Labor is the superior of capital and deserves much the higher consideration. Yet, on this Labor Day, robber barons are again ascendant, declaring that they owe no shared prosperity to the American people who sustain them. They are blithely shredding America's social contract, and again insisting that the corporate elite must be unfettered, unions eliminated, and middle-class jobs Walmarted. This is Jim Hightower saying, their deliberate hollowing out of our middle class is not just ignorant, but immoral. And dangerous. After all, even a dog knows the difference between being stumbled over and being kicked.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
How's this for irony? Ronald Reagan, who is worshipped as the supreme deity by small government anti-spending zealots, not only has a government office building in Washington named for him, but it's the biggest and costliest one ever built. The only face-saving factor in this sardonic incongruity is that managers of the Reagan building have embraced a right-wing, laissez-faire concept that the Gipper enthusiastically championed, privatization of government jobs. However, that hasn't worked out to be a positive for his legacy, since Reagan's edifice now stands as a model of private profiteering on the backs of workers. In effect, corporate contractors are using privatization and our tax dollars to transform America into a low-wage nation of gross inequality. The building is public property, but its food concessions have been turned over to such multi-billion-dollar fast food chains as Subway. Not only do they pay low wages with no benefits, but they're also being charged with, quote, serious, willful, and chronic wage theft. In particular, workers in the food court have filed formal complaints with the Labor Department documenting that while work weeks of 60, 70, and even 80 hours are common, they're never paid overtime. Not only is this a rank violation of our fair labor laws, but the practice also means they're being paid less than the minimum wage. This is Jim Hightower saying, come on, even Reagan favored at least a minimal level of decency, fairness, and respect for workers. Where's the morality in CEOs grabbing tax dollars to help subsidize their lavish executive pay packages, then turning around and stiffing their own workers in our name? To help counter this despicable corporate conversion of government into a force for poverty jobs, contact Good Jobs Nation at www.goodjobsnation.org.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
You're listening to the new WHFR Journal for September
6th.
What's today? Yeah, the 6th. And things coming up. The reason you have to know what the day is, if you're listening to the podcast, it's later, of course. Although maybe you could catch it after 2 o'clock on the 6th or sometime later in the day. And that's nice. You can always do that from WHFR.fm. Two things happening. One is from our friends at Citizens for Peace, a nonprofit group in this area, in the Detroit area. They're going to have a film on September 10th. So if today is the 6th, Monday's the 9th, the 10th is Tuesday, mm-hmm. and that'll be at Unity of Livonia on 5 Mile Road. So that's, yeah, I don't know if they would call it a church, but that's their religion, the Church of Unity. And Unity of Livonia, 5 Mile Road at 7 p.m. It's a feature film focusing on the need for love and nonviolence for our survival. It's filmed in Israel, India, Turkey, Morocco, Australia, Mexico, and the United States. We even have a need for love and nonviolence here. That's good to know. And there was interviews with global spiritual leaders, and also producers are going to be there, and they'll discuss the making of the film and be available for questions afterwards. So it'll be definitely uplifting, I'm sure. So that's, we believe, Tuesday. If today is Friday the 6th, then Tuesday, September 10th at Unity of Livonia at 7 p.m. Also, next week Friday.
Dun, 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 dun. No?
There it is.
There it is.
Elderfest returns to Dearborn. So if you're an elder, senior citizen type, you'd like to have a fun-filled free day of outdoor activities. Well, if you're 50 or older, you're invited to attend Autumn Elderfest. Oh, Autumn Elderfest. Mm-hmm. They're going to do it every season now?
No. But
it was always just once a year part of homecoming.
In the
now
summer,
it's
right?
Separate. But that was, according to seniors, they asked for a change because they said it was too hot.
Well, I can understand.
During homecoming.
That. Sure.
This year it was beautiful, though, but very cool. Anyway, that's next week, Friday, September 13th. 6 and 7, makes 13, yep. And that's Ford Field Park. It's actually, I didn't know this, Ford Field Park actually in West Dearborn there has actually got an address.
Really?
It's 22051 Cherry Hill, okay. Which runs on the north side. So it's got a mailing address. I wonder where the mailbox is.
Right by the pavilion, maybe?
I don't know. And hosted by the Senior Services Division of Dearborn Recreation and Parks Department. And a variety of activities. Ooh, a pie baking contest.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And you can sign up and drop your pies off.
Nobody makes a pie like an elder.
Bakers can try one of two categories. But it's only, you can't get fancy here. It's either apple or berry.
Oh, berry.
Now, the thing is, there's a lot of different berries out there.
Sure.
It's a world full of berries.
Yeah.
In many ways. This year's festival will get underway with a breakfast at 10 a.m. sponsored by Henry Ford Village. So 50 or over, bingo is sponsored by Hal Peterson Funeral Home.
Stop it.
The fun walk with Mayor O'Reilly starts at 11:30. Well, at least you don't have to start the day with that. You get a chance to have breakfast first.
Right. Well, that's how
and,
it was
and
before.
And digest your food.
Yeah.
And then take
then the
a walk.
Prank. Sure.
And
so this sounds like everything's the same.
The bocce ball courts will open at 11:30.
Oh, wow.
And musical entertainment will be the group Family Affair.
Hmm.
That was a TV show, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, that's 11:45. Lunch. Ooh, hot dogs, corn on the cob, and soft drinks, sponsored by the Exchange Club of Dearborn. And the Herring Center of Excellence and Assurant Care will be serving starting at noon. Top off your lunch with ice cream, as usual, sponsored by Wayne County Commission Chairman Gary Warrenchuk. Hey, they know a healthy diet over there.
So, hot dogs, chips, pop. So this is for people 50 and over, Dearborn residents, this is free?
It doesn't say Dearborn resident. Dearborn seniors, yeah, it's free.
It's all free. That's yeah. crazy.
Elderfest will wrap up after lunch with the anniversary waltz.
Are you going to do this, do you think?
No, I'm here, remember?
Oh, yeah.
But that's a little later. Yeah, but the anniversary waltz is at 1 p.m. at the Dearborn Inn.
Wow.
Followed by a raffle sponsored by State Rep George T. Duraney.
This is
how do you get to the Dearborn Inn?
Hey, it's right on Oakwood, across from Greenfield Village.
Yeah, but you start at Ford Field.
Sure.
They give you a shuttle down to
the
Dearborn Inn.
You can drive?
I thought you're supposed to walk everywhere.
Maybe the Hal Peterson, maybe they'll have the hearse there and people...
That's right. You could ride in the hearse. That would be cool. You know.
Shuttle.
Mm-hmm. Get used to it, folks. followed by... all of us will begin it eventually. Followed by a raffle and George Duraney. Admission to Elderfest is free. So a fun time will be had by all if you're a Dearborn resident and you're a senior age 50 or older. And I bet knowing the city of Dearborn, you'll have to prove it. You'll have to prove it before you get started with that breakfast. Somebody's going to be there checking.
See some ID. You have to be.
That's a great activity. Sounds like plenty to do there. But
you have to be born before 19, whatever, to get in.
So here at Henry Ford Community College, if all goes as planned, we could end up with a $1.4 million surplus this year, and that was a dramatic turnaround from the $16 million shortfall. I mentioned this last week to you, but
yeah.
You know, it's thanks to, a lot of early retirements, which saves the college money. So 17 instructors and one top administrator took early retirement. And you say, well, but they're getting paid. Yeah, they're getting paid, but if you hire new people in, they're at a much lower place in the pay scale. Early retirement always makes money. Okay, for it's yeah. And even in the first year, but certainly after 5 years, it's not just money up front right away. It's a little bit of extra money for 5 years, and then it's gone forever. And I miss my early retirement supplement. I really do. But nonetheless, I'm sure some of these people will budget better than I did. We're losing a couple great teachers, I just want to mention the Henry Ford Community College Federation of Teachers president, that's Local 1650, John McDonald, is retiring after 44 years. John McDonald, one of the great leaders here of the faculty and contributors to the education, too, he's an English teacher, although I think eventually they made the Federation president's job full-time. And so I don't think he's actually taught any classes for a while, but a great teacher in English. I was his first office partner for several years, and he was a great, great person. And a question for the faculty here and the union here is, how can we ever get someone who's as good as John McDonald in representing our situation and negotiating so well for us? Again, always concerned about education first. But if you don't support the teachers, then the teachers are not going to do a very good job. Also, popular teacher Nabil Abraham is leaving after 28 years. And Nabil, we've talked to on the show in the past, is from the social science area. Anthropologist, I believe, by trade.
I think so, too.
Yeah, and but head also of our Honors College here, which was threatened with extinction a couple of years ago as a cost-cutting move, and I'm not sure what's going to be happening there either, and that would be a great loss to lose that option for extremely capable and qualified students to get a head start on a really superior education. Almost no other community college does this sort of thing. And, you know, if they just can't afford to go to a four-year school, even with a tuition increase that might happen for next January, we'll still be the second lowest in Michigan.
I just know just 2 years ago, two members of the honors program, like you said, under the tutelage of Dr. Abraham, went on to win the most prestigious scholarships that were available to them. One of them was the Jack Kemp Scholarship Award, and the other one was USA Today Scholarship. And we had two people from the same honors class 2 years ago that went on to win that, and I believe somebody from here was, if they didn't win, they were considered heavily last year, too. So he's done a lot of things, and those probably aren't the first people that were candidates. He does a real good job of getting people ready for those awards.
One of the Board of Trustee members at the last board meeting for Henry Ford Community College, Mary Lane, said she opposed any increase. That's the increase in tuition. Families are already under a heavy burden to provide a college education to their students. And our president said a lot of people, including myself, take containing costs very seriously. And Trustee James Schoolmaster, I'm not sure he's the president right now, but anyway, of course, he's been on the board for many years. Trustee James Schoolmaster said, unfortunately, the state has walked away from higher education. Decades ago, he says, state funding covered about 80% of college costs. Now the figure is closer to 20%.
Yeah.
And how can a school make that up? You can't do it by just alumni gifts, folks, especially not a community college. Now, I think he's wrong. I'm sorry, James. I think that's true if you talk about four-year schools. But Henry Ford Community College has pretty much always been supported by tuition. I mean, 80% right now of our budget comes from tuition, 17% from tax millages. And it's always been about that number. Okay, we don't get much federal aid. We do get some state aid, thank you very much, but it's we never got 80% of the money from state government. That never was the case. And I've been here 45 years, and I know that Michigan supports its higher education, including community colleges, almost the worst in all the states of the 50 states in terms of the per capita amount invested in higher education. We're always down by like 48, 46 out of 50. And that's not a mark of honor, folks. That's not a mark of honor. And the question is, how can anyone, but especially poor people who are qualified, go to college? If you don't go to college, well, there goes your life, pretty much. You lose all the opportunities for a good job and everything that goes along with that. And, you know, all the great education and knowledge that comes from that, too. So there has to be change outside of Dearborn, but for the time being, there's not much else anybody can do here until our elected representatives get going. Okay, I'd like to shift to mentioning elected representatives. State Representative George T. Durini from Dearborn talked about how great it was that Medicaid expansion is going to happen in Michigan. It was passed. And I think it's already been signed by the governor, or will shortly. But, of course, the problem is delayed implementation. And I happen to have Jack Lessenberry's
editorial. You have stuff spread. If people can see this, you have things everywhere around you. Handy.
Yeah, right. As long as I can find whichever is handy. And so Lessenberry, of course, feels that there's astounding hypocrisy in our state in terms of health insurance, and our legislators are the ones that are guilty here. You know, the official date was in 2011, November of 2011. Our legislators voted themselves lifetime health care, not just while they were in office, complete paid lifetime health care. So even if you just spent 2 years as a state rep,
mm-hmm.
you've got health care for the rest of your life. There's a reason to run for office.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. Even if you had to put out $100,000 in campaign posters and mailings, I mean, my God, health care for life?
Yeah.
Just in 3 or 4 years, you'll make back the $100,000 the way the costs are these days.
Hopefully you'll be sick enough, sure.
So talk about irony. I mean, you know, the poor have to suffer. And the rich, and especially our legislators, lifetime health care they voted for themselves. And that was, of course, in 2011, when it was pretty much all Republicans and a Republican governor, and they signed that in place. So you're trying to contain costs, you know, that's not one way to do it. Nonetheless, you know, as I've said on the show before, in personal opinion, I believe that the right kind of universal single-payer health care will be cheaper for all of us. Take the best parts of what they have in Canada and France and Germany and England, the best parts. We don't have to do it like Canada or like France, but put it all together, and we'll have a system that finally can be the best in the world and maybe one of the lowest costing healthcare systems in the world. But it's going to have to be done at the federal level, I believe. I don't see any other answer, because it's already been proven that the best healthcare systems and those that are containing costs are already national systems. Now, you can carp and pick little details out of anything, but in general, that should be what we're going for. Well, of course, we're not. We're going for something that's an amalgam here. But what I saw, and I'm not going to do all of the editorial, which is in Metro Times this week by Jack Lessenberry, but he pointed out some details here, and we know that the Medicaid situation, that the federal government will toss money at us to help pay for the extension of Medicaid, that is for the people under the Medicare age. It's called Medicaid, okay? And we didn't pass it for immediate action. We passed it, that is we, the Congress, the House of Representatives, the Senate, and our governor in Lansing. We said we're not going to jump in until April. Okay. So that means in Michigan, between January and April, unless they go back and vote immediate effect, the poor folks could be liable for a fee of $95 or more for not having health insurance, plus additional fines of half that amount for any children they may have. I think that's per month, probably. It doesn't say here.
Right.
Worse, the state will lose a vast amount of money, $7 million a day, which it would get from the feds if Medicaid expansion were in force. Over the 3 months before the bill kicks in, that amounts to $630 million we won't be getting. And he says, so Michigan loses a ton of money by not giving the bill immediate effect. Incredibly, that doesn't matter to the ideologues of the rabid right. Scott Hagerstrom is the puppet director of the Koch brothers' grotesquely misnamed Americans for Prosperity Michigan. And he goes on and besmirching several different people's characters here. But who's to blame? Who's to blame? You know, okay, they don't like the health care that was voted. Some people, health care reform, I call it, but other people call it Obamacare. Those reforms we need. It doesn't have cost containment. It's not for everybody. There's some real problems with it. But it's definitely the right way to go. And yes, it's constitutional. And yes, the American public thinks so. Why? Because they reelected Barack Obama. So if he took the brunt on that, everybody in the U.S. said, no, that's bad. Okay, they wouldn't have reelected him. So, excuse me, he's definitely right. I hope our legislature, and I bet George DeRaney would be in favor of voting for immediate effect. He's already sent that press release out that he was not for that. But can they get enough votes before January to put that in effect? For the good of the health of the people of Michigan, it's not perfect, but we need to take the money and run to help the poor people in Michigan. I think that's a collective responsibility. Alrighty, that's in Metro Times this week. Yep, September 4th through 10th. On your newsstands now, or here at Henry Ford Community College, there's still a couple issues left. Alrighty, what else do we have here? Well, we didn't cover the papers because most of the news stories we do here, we try to be as up-to-date and we try to break the stories as quickly as they're out there.
Plus, there's a lot going on at the college, and you covered a lot of that.
Yeah. Arab American National Museum is going to be expanding. That was in last Sunday's Press and Guide. And
they've
almost doubled. They have a new director, and there's a great story in Wednesday's Press and Guide about him. And
he's a young one, 37, I think.
Kind of interesting is that, you know, off the record, it was said that Mayor Mike Guido was totally against the Arab American Museum being built directly across from City Hall. He thought that was an affront to his administration.
Why?
Well, you'd have to ask him, but he's dead now, so
yeah, okay.
No disrespect. But he was totally against that, I guess because he felt that was only a small percentage of the community, and it was casting Dearborn in the wrong light. I'm only guessing. I have no idea, but I clearly know he was against them building there. Well, of course, that's one reason to move City Hall, huh? Okay, they're just going to have an art gallery across the street, Art Space. That goes ahead, of course. They've got permission already from the city council to allow changes in the parking regulations. Actually, there's plenty of parking behind that facility, a former Kroger parking lot. And that's people delivering mail to the college here, to our radio station. Had to go and let them in. Dennis is gone now. I can say whatever I want to. Okay. So congratulations to the Arab American National Museum and their new director. The new director's name is significant. Devin Ackman, A-K-M-O-N. Devin Ackman. Looks like a very energetic young person, smiling nice here in the picture in Wednesday's Press and Guide. And they're planning a wide range of events. Of course, they do a wide range of events now, both music and lectures and special presentations. And so it's going to be a great facility. I don't know how long it'll take them to expand. All right. Okay. Former Dearborn City Council candidate, who came out last, by the way, in the vote total, though, it was reported he's charged now with taking bribes.
But not in Dearborn.
No, not in Dearborn. But I'm not really sure what's the story other than, I mean, he didn't win anyway. He's not one of the candidates for the primary, so I don't even think I need to mention his name.
No.
But
the charges came about a while ago, and now they're all coming to light. In other words, the investigation started a while ago, and then he was running for
Stuff happens.
Council.
Yeah. Since I went to high school down there, the Flat Rock Ford plant is now making Fusions.
All right.
Their most popular car. Mm-hmm. 181,000 Fusions. Is it a month or something? Okay. You look at the story.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my goodness. Got to get it right here.
All right.
Okay. My goodness.
Let's come up with a number. Whatever I don't know, I just make up.
Yeah. It sold about 181,000 Fusions in July. That's an increase of 18%. And they say they could have sold more if they had more. I don't know where they were making them previously, but since Mazda moved out of that plant, which was a cooperative venture over many years, that's why the Flat Rock plant was built. It was Ford and Mazda. Ford had a 25% ownership in Mazda, and that is not the case anymore. Mazda is back under their own control. And so when Mazda moved out, they just had the Ford Mustang be made down there. But the Mustang didn't have that kind of volume. Imagine 181,000 cars a month. How many per day, Dennis?
A lot.
6,000 plus a day.
Yeah.
Quick math in my head there.
Yeah, that's why you get the big bucks.
Right. 6,000 a day coming off several assembly lines, and so Mustangs are part of it still, but they couldn't, they were thinking of closing the plant because they just didn't need it. They could make Mustangs maybe somewhere else as a sideline or something. And it doesn't say how many Mustangs they made. But anyway, because of this, they've added 1,400 jobs to the plant. That's
wow.
Right, 1,400 more jobs to the plant in Flat Rock to do all the Fusions down there. So if you want to, you know, buy something that's made in America, and there's many cars that are, of course, then, you know, Ford is making the Fusion nearby.
Right in our backyard, sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If that means anything, it's always nice to see that people are getting more jobs, too. And they're going to be updating the plant. They're putting in like $500 million, almost $500 million in upgrading the plant there. And it's going to be heavily computerized and modularized so they can easily change to other models, which was always a problem before.
Well, that makes some. I was just going to say, these things work in cycles, as we know. They'll come up with a new version. It won't be as popular, whatever. So this gives it an opportunity. Now, this is in Flat Rock?